Hey, glad you're with us. We move along. That'll do it for this program. But the boys from Jaguars Thursday join us now. J.P. Shattuck, Jeff Lagerman, and Tony Baselli. What's up,
fellas? Hey, Frank, I got to tell you, you stumped me with that music. What is that?
You did Jim Croce.
Oh, that's Croce. Wow.
Right on. Come on, JP.
Sorry, Tony.
Who doesn't love Croce, for God's
sake? Give me a break.
I was born in 1981.
Everyone knows that.
Baselli doesn't even know who he is.
Yes, I do. He's one of my favorite. I have his whole box set.
the whole thing, not half of it.
The Baselli box set.
Have the box set.
Yeah, you know it's an old artist when they got box sets.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know? Albums rocked, Logs. I mean, albums were the best.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Said getting more vinyl?
A little vinyl.
More vinyl? You got vinyl?
I was personally a big fan of A-Track.
Yeah, A-Track rocked. I had A-Track in the Cutlass, just so you know, the old Cutlass. Kind of car? What was your first car, Jeff? First car?
My first one was a 1978 International Scout in school bus yellow orange.
Sweet.
with a white rally stripe, but it had some sweet accent. It was kind of like rust prime.
Yeah, yeah.
Gray primer.
I can see Logs with a rally stripe, though, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Baselli, what was your first car?
I had a J10, a 1978 J10 red pickup truck. It was a Jeep pickup truck.
Wow.
I had the 69 Cutlass. That surprised you, JP?
69
Cutlass.
No, I had an 89 Buick Century.
Whoa. What motor did you have in it, Frank?
No idea. Okay.
Wait, Jeff, stop. You think Frank knows anything about cars?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're driving a 69 Cutlass,
it doesn't matter.
Okay?
You can't even change the oil.
Okay.
Yeah.
You gotta know what's under the hood.
First of all, let me make sure you understand this, Tony. I do know that it had a motor. Okay. So no matter what you say,
it had four wheels too. Apparently.
I was very aware of all that. No, I did not know it was on. Here's the deal. My dad passed away in '73, Jeff, and I couldn't drive until probably a year later than that. So we just sat in the driveway, and then I drove it. I drove it, the car he left me, and drove it for about a year until it didn't work anymore. Than about another.
Well, let me ask you this question. When you mashed on the gas, did it burn rubber?
It went pretty good now. Yeah, it did. It was pretty – it was a quick little –
What do you think, Joe, 442 in there?
No. That's not –
350.
350.
He had three on the tree. 350 with three on the tree.
That's a you, Baselli. Car guy. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know less about – I know less about cars than you.
Now, wait a minute, Frank and Tony. I did. I had a short period of time when I was going to a different vehicle because I tried to take that 1978 Scout swimming, and it didn't work. Okay, so
did you now?
So there was a period of time I had to drive. I think it was like a 1970 Chevrolet pickup that my dad had, and it did have the three on the tree.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, which is the shifter up on the steering column.
Yeah, I drove one of those. I had one of those. That was awesome. If you get a manual shift up on the column, you were rocking, right?
Oh, old school.
There you go. JP, do you ever drive a manual shift car?
I never learned, actually.
You could drive, yeah. You're too young. Guys, no. I'm telling you, people your age can't drive it. Yeah. Sticks you.
No, the 89
Buick.
You know what? The 89 Buick Century did not have a three on the tree, I'll tell you that.
You know what the problem with that is, though? If you ever go overseas and they still have the rental cars still are manual.
Yeah, and on the other side of the car.
Well,
shifting with your left hand.
No,
which
not,
is totally foreign.
That's in England.
That's what I'm
Italy
talking about.
Places. Well, there's other places in Europe, Jeff. You realize that than just England.
What? Where?
We are kind of locked into one island. That's true. So, what's coming up tonight, JP?
Well, a lot going on. Players reportedly in the building today. We'll get to Jeff's assessment of some of the tape he watched. He keeps watching prospects. We'll go through all that. We'll go around the National Football League. Busy week, and that's what we got tonight. We'll talk about cars.
What
also.
What more do you want?
We'll talk about cars a little more as we go.
We got cars.
You know what this is. You know what this is right now? This is the lull before the storm because we're kind of in that period where we've been, you know, watching tape and talking draft, but there's only so much you can talk about until the week before the draft and really draft night. Right now is kind of that kind of slow period because there's only so many mocks. You know, you got all the workouts, you got all the call pro days, you've got the visits, and this is where you have, like, the seventh mock. That is simply just put out to change the order of, you know, a couple guys.
When are you going to do a Tony Baselli mock 1.0?
Yeah, where's your mock coming out, Baselli?
You know what? I'm going to do a mock. I will do one this year. I'll have a mock for next Thursday night show.
Wow. You got a week to think about it.
No, I'm going to do a mock. I might do all seven rounds.
Let's just do it tonight live. seven-round mock.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to go toe-to-toe with Mayock. I'm going to have a national conference call, too, and let all the writers know what I think.
It is a they're going to be draft talk and car talk and maybe even some Masters talk, I'm guessing.
Oh, hey, Frank, I saw you on hole 15 today. You took Jordan Spieth's place for a hole. Congratulations.
How about that, huh?
A little nine spot. That's like,
how about the nine?
That was Franzi-esque.
I've written a nine on the card many a time, bro. I can promise you that. I've written a lot of nines down there.
I think I could have beat him on that hole.
The show is Jaguars Thursday. Starts now.
Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday. Jaguars Thursday. JP Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, and Tony Baselli bring you the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, and by Everbank.
Touchdown, Jacksonville!
Jaguars Thursday, driven with SunPass, begins right now.
We're off and running. JP Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman in Jacksonville. Tony Baselli is not. Where are you, Tony?
I'm in the Big Apple, New York City.
What are you doing there?
Well, doing a little draft research. Looking at the guys in the Northeast, getting ready for my mock.
Getting ready for my mock draft. A little road scouting. I like it.
Yeah, road scout. I'm a road scout.
Did you know that's Logs' town? He used to live there. You know?
Oh, Logs is big here.
Very big.
Big. Yeah. I saw a 56 Jets jersey walking down the street.
Especially around draft time. Yeah. They love him.
Oh. Yeah.
I had someone with a few of them at the draft.
Yeah. Seen a couple mullets up here. 56 jerseys. It's all good.
Yeah.
Baselli and the Big Apple. Where are you going to eat at?
I've not decided yet. That's my next task as soon as I get off the with you guys.
Well, you're on the diet, so you got to be careful.
It'll be somewhere good. I promise you that.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be
careful. There's plenty of those places up there.
Oh, gosh. It'd be great.
I wish I could remember.
Even, you know what's amazing about New York? I went to this just a kosher deli for lunch, and I don't know what it is. The corned beef and the bread. I mean, everything
it's
just
the
tastes
bread.
Better.
It's the bread.
It just tastes better.
It's the bread. It is. It's the bread. New York bread is the best bread in the world.
It's unreal.
The water that they use in the dough, the water comes from upstate. It has some type of properties that makes the bread rise better and cook better.
Like hydrogen and oxygen?
Don't ask me
like
what it
all
is.
Other water?
I can just tell you, though, that it's the water that makes the bread in New York what it is.
It's instead of H2O, JP, it's H2.5.
Yeah, that. Yeah. Whatever you said.
But it is good, though. I mean, eating a bagel.
No, it's just, I had this corned beef sandwich. It was so good. It was unreal. Mm. Just a corned beef sandwich. Very basic.
I can tell you, Tony, one of the best meals that I have had in New York, JP turned me on to it.
Hey, I know some restaurants.
And
get around.
And
yeah, we can tell by looking at you.
And I can tell you that, you know, we took JP's advice and we went to this place. And, you know, it was one of those kind of places that's been there since 1930-something or 40s, whatever it was, and it was absolutely fantastic.
What was it? What kind of food?
It's an Italian joint.
Italian.
Great Italian food up here.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
So.
Do you remember the name of it, Jake?
Yeah, I'll have to look it up.
I got it on
break.
My phone.
Yeah, we'll pass it along to you, Tony.
Yeah, pass it along. I might have to go visit that.
I'll pull it up.
The veal parm, bone-in veal parm. So, plenty to get to. Players in the building today. It's that time of year. Prospects come on visits. What do you learn, guys, in a visit like this that you didn't already know about a guy? Tony, what do you think?
I think I probably would have been a little bit more cynical saying, what are you going to learn? But I'm telling you, and I talked about it a couple weeks ago, being at that combine, sitting down with guys, I think you get a kind of a window into kind of their personality and their makeup and kind of what drives them and how would they fit in a locker room. And Jeff will tell you the same thing that I'm telling you. That's important in building a team. That locker room is important, how guys relate. In each individual meeting, you look at like an offensive line meeting room. the makeup of that group and how they relate, their person—I mean, that can—I'm not going to say it makes or breaks a unit, but it sure can help a lot. And you want to make sure you have the right guys and kind of, you know, I'm not saying it's the final decision or, you know, how much weight you put into it, but it might sway you one way or another of taking a guy. And also what you do, you know, the question is, why do you bring in so many guys? You're only going to draft 8. I mean, that's how many picks they have right now unless they trade.
Right.
But it's the research you're doing for the future, because these guys are going to be free. A lot of them are going to be free agents, or they might get cut, or, you know, 4 years from now. And so this goes into the file of each individual guy that is going to be information that you're going to use in the immediate, but for years to come as well.
I think the best part is that you get them out of their comfort zone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're not on campus. It's not their environment. You're putting them in your environment. You're having your people talk to them. It's just different, you know, and it's another tool to evaluate a prospect and see how they are. And look, there may be some questions that you have that you haven't been able to get answered that you want to be able to ask one-on-one. And so, I mean, does it mean a lot? No, but it means a little. You know, it's part of the equation.
Is there any gamesmanship involved with other teams? Hey, we're going to bring in these top 10 prospects in the whole draft, knowing we only have the number 4 pick. Hey,
there could be, but you know what? What are you allowed? 30?
Yeah, 30? Something like that.
I mean, so Tony, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you've only got the ability to bring in a limited number of prospects, is there some gamesmanship to that? I don't think so. I think maybe after the draft, somebody might tell you, well, that was gamesmanship, just because they're trying to maybe, you know, cover themselves for the future. But when you have so many limited opportunities to bring in prospects, I don't think you want to waste them. And I don't see Tom Coughlin or Dave Caldwell wanting to waste time with anybody. I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't buy the gamesmanship. If you're wasting gamesmanship around the draft, or, you know, trying to fool somebody with who you bring in or don't bring in or whatever, that's a waste of time, in my opinion. So I think a lot of that just sounds good and it's fun to talk for you, maybe. But I think it's pretty much nonsense.
Tony Boselli in New York, Jeff Lagerman, JP Shadrick in Jacksonville. We'll come back and go through Jeff Lagerman's tape and film today.
Wait a minute, Tony, you got a pen?
Yes.
Okay, write this down. Okay, this is the restaurant that you need to go to tonight.
Yeah.
Okay, the one that JP turned me on to. Mm-hmm. Emilio's, Emilio's, Bellato, Bellato. It's 55 East Houston Street.
There's also this great Scottish restaurant up there called McDonald's. So check that one out, too.
No. If you want. Ooh, that sounds good.
I can tell you, I had the linguine white clam at this place.
Ooh.
Oh, my.
Yeah. We'll come back with more. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars.com and Jaguars Radio.
I'm excited, you know, go against them twice a year. I know those guys, so just competing against those guys over there is going to be fun. And, you know, playing against the Jaguars 2 times a year since I've been in, we've always seen how athletic this team is and what they're capable of, and just the mentality that everybody's trying to bring in. You know, I talked to some of the coaches and everything in the front office, so I'm definitely excited, man. I've been grinding hard, and I know a lot of players have too, because we know what we can do here.
A.J. Boye earlier today on Ozone Live on the Jaguars Facebook page, the archive on Jaguars.com. I've got to remind you, the countdown to Daly's Place opening night is 52 days. Brought to you by the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association and Visit Florida. Play local, eat local, stay and play. And that first show is May 27th at Esky Truck Stand. Journey tickets go on sale tomorrow, Jeff. I know you'll be on the phone.
I like
for
Journey.
That.
I like him.
A lot of people do. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a good show. JP Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Boselli's on the line with us in New York. Who'd you watch today, Jeff?
I'll bring up the last guy, Forrest Lamp, Western Kentucky.
Mm.
Many people view him as the number one rated guard, and at Western Kentucky, he actually played left tackle. And Tony,
good player.
He is a really good football player.
Did you watch the Alabama tape?
I did. I watched the Senior Bowl one-on-one stuff, and then I watched a couple games against, I couldn't tell you who, like Memphis and some of these other smaller schools that Western Kentucky plays. And then I went back at the end and watched the Alabama game. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that no matter who lined up against him from the University of Alabama, he blocked him.
He's a good player.
He is a really good football player. 6'3", 310. You know, he's got the build of a guard. But, you know, I think he's got some value for teams. First of all, that, you know, he's projected to be a guard and projected to be a very good guard. He moves unbelievable. I mean, when he's pulling, very fast. But to have a guard, you know, that you expect to play a guard that may have the flexibility to maybe play a little left tackle for you in a pinch, that's got some value for teams.
Really impressed with him. I like him a lot. Unfortunately, he's not going to be there at the top of the second round. I mean, he's going to be picked in the first round. Obviously, four is too high to take him. But, boy, if somehow he slipped to the top of the second, I'd run to the podium to make that pick.
Is that a position or a group that you would want to trade back into the first round late?
Could.
Well, I would think about it. If he's there, you know, in the 25 to 32 range, I sure would think about it. He's a good boy. He's a day one starter.
I think
he comes in, he starts.
A player of that caliber, yes, that you would consider trying to get back up into the first round or, you know, or trading out of where you're at number four, whatever it takes. But the other guy that I watched before, and he was a tackle at Indiana, Dan Freeney.
Another good player.
Yeah, good player. But, you know, he's projected to be a guard too. But he is not of the caliber of Forrest Lamp.
There's a big
difference.
There's a big difference. But he's a starting caliber guard in the NFL as well.
Yes.
And I don't know if you watched the kid from Temple, Jeff. I like him a lot, too, a guard.
I didn't watch
Deion
him.
Deion Dixon.
I actually watched the linebacker from Temple today. Let me pull up his name because so many guys, I'm trying to remember who they are. But he's a linebacker from Temple. Hassan Reddick. And he's like a 6'1", 245-pound defensive end. And he's projected, you know, in the first round, probably in the top, you know, 20, 25, somewhere in that range. And did I get the height, weight right, JP?
6'1", 237.
Okay, so 6'1", 240-ish. Tony, a great Temple defensive end and he's got super twitch ability, pass rush ability. He's going to probably play, you know, somewhere else. He's going to play linebacker, you know, but in a 3-4
team.
Is he
a 3-4 outside linebacker, Jeff?
You know, and I don't know if he's got the length to do that consistently, but I think that because, you know, he lined up a little bit everywhere for Temple. He played defensive end both left and right side, and then he would line up in that spinner package where he was kind of a spy, and he's got great movement, but the coverage stuff, you don't really see any of that because that's not what they're asking him to do. But I think for a 3-4 team, would you want him to be your outside guy all the time? Probably not. But, you know, when you've got a guy that has some pass rush ability that can play inside, but then the blitzing potential of a guy like that, I can tell you one thing. He is one heck of a football player, super athletic, and he's going to make somebody very happy.
And I don't know. I haven't watched him, but you know a guy who did that when we played, Jeff, was Chad Brown. He played inside linebacker for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and on third down he was your right defensive end, heck of a player.
Yeah, and you know what? Reddick might be able to do that. You know, maybe he can because he's kind of got that slipperiness to him to the outside to where maybe he could give you some snaps. But, you know, what was Chad Brown? What was he? How high? How tall?
No, 6'1", 6'2".
Two, yeah, 6'2". So, I mean, it's not that much different. So, you know, look, if Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis can do it, I mean, they weren't a whole lot taller than that.
No.
So, yeah, I mean, he probably could give you some snaps there. He's a good football player. But watch him. I actually watched Trubisky today.
Mitchell Trubisky, North Carolina.
Yeah, and I watched the bowl game, which was against Stanford. And
Sun Bowl, right?
Yeah.
Sun Bowl in El Paso, yes.
Yep. And you know what? He made some nice throws, and he made some throws that weren't that impressive. To be honest with you, I don't think he's got a super strong arm.
Now, the word is, though, Jeff, that's one of his – qualities that he does have a good arm.
Most people, according to the scouting reports, will say an above average arm strength, but I don't see that. I would say it's average arm strength at best. And when when the talk is that he's going to be one of the top quarterbacks off of the board, I would have a hard time saying that he's got great arm strength. Efficient with the ball. Makes some kind of some. He made some bad decisions in the bowl game. I know overall he's been pretty careful with the football. But you know the one guy that stood out in the bowl game when I'm watching Trubisky?
Solomon Thomas.
Yep. Jumped
he's
out.
He's a player.
And in fact, at the end of that ball game, I give Trubisky a lot of credit. He brought his team back, and he scored a touchdown to where now at the end of the game they're going to go for two to tie the ball game up. And on the 2-point play, he got sacked by Solomon Thomas, who made an unbelievable play to get in the backfield and somehow grabbed him with this hand of Superman and pulled him down. A great play by Solomon Thomas. But it's fun.
But you're worried about Solomon Thomas's size.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's, what, 6'3", 275. But you know what? I think in a perfect world, you're worried about his size. But at the end of the day, when you watch how productive he is against all levels and any level and pretty much any position, I think you're not as concerned. But I think, you know, if you're talking about having a prototypical defensive tackle, a prototypical defensive end, you know, I think, yeah, you would have concerns. But he's such a good football player, I wouldn't worry too much about it because he's just flat-out football player.
And I think this is where teams get in trouble. I think we all get in trouble. I mean, you look at a guy like Solomon Thomas, who had, great tape. I mean, just fabulous tape, fabulous production. Good athlete, good numbers. And then you go, but he's not the perfect size. Jeff, how many football players have been in the history of the NFL who've been fabulous difference makers on, let's say, just talk about defense, that instead of being 6'4.5", 6'5", or 6'2.5", 6'3", but they're just great football. I mean, you can rattle them off. And I think that's where you get in trouble. If the guy has great tape, his numbers at the combine were good, let's not worry about that he might be an inch or two short.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. How many quarterbacks have been drafted because they have had that prototypical 6'4", 6'5", 230 pounds because of that?
A lot.
This is the 5'11 small hands debate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Whereas a guy like Drew Brees, he's really not he doesn't have the height, and look what he's done. But it's like what Tony is talking about is the number. Sometimes you try to put a guy in a category, and if he doesn't fit that mold of that category, you downgrade him. And the quarterbacks, you're kind of, okay, when we find a guy that fits that category as far as the measurables, then we're going to elevate him a little bit, so.
And that's where you get in trouble, I think.
Yeah.
We'll come back and open the phone lines for a segment. 355-NFL-1. We'll go through some other prospects. And could the Jags go quarterback with the 4th overall pick? Food for thought when we come back. McAllen's AC is giving you a chance to get your electric bill paid for the entire season. Just guess the weekly order of opponents for the 2017 Jaguars season, and you could win. Enter today at McAllensAC.com. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars.
Back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday continues right now.
Check out Jack Hanania's Audi Jacksonville on Blanding. You can lease a beautiful new A3 from just $229 a month. Head over today for details. Jaguars Thursday, J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman in Jacksonville, Tony Vaselli on the line in New York City tonight. We go to the phone lines and start off in Mandarin. Steve is on the line. A question about an offensive lineman. What's up?
Thank you so much for taking my call. Interested in your thoughts surrounding left guard. I'm guessing after writing the Bouye Campbell Church checks, Mr. Kahn probably, turned off his phone and didn't even want to hear the names Lang or Warford once the Zeitler numbers came in. But the thought of using the 35 pick on left guard in such a weak O-line class when, there's so much D-line running back and tight end help, as well as even DB depth into the 4th round, seems at least like, on the surface, we're kind of forcing our hand and limiting draft flexibility. You don't know if anybody could get excited about a Omima, Shatley, or later round rookie competition. So curious if you think Jari Evans has anything left. And question for Tony, if he were to have enough left in the tank to be an upgrade, which should be a reasonable price, would O-line cohesion become too much of a concern, knowing they might potentially have to replace both Evans and Albert in consecutive years if they were to do something?
You know, I didn't watch a lot of Evans. I mean, he's up there in age, obviously. But if you feel like he can come and be competitive, the price is going to be right. I'd be fine with it. And no, I wouldn't worry about – listen, this is a team right now that needs to worry about this year. And one of the areas of weakness still is this offensive line. They got to get better. I mean, I know JP and I were talking about the other day, and so with Joe as well, about what they do with that fourth pick. And a lot of the talk is around running back and Fournette. And my whole point is Fournette's a great player. But you better fix that offensive line if you're going to draft a back that high. Because in my experience is, I don't care who you got back there running the ball, if you don't open holes and don't give them a crease to run through. Now, a great back will make an offensive line better. There's no doubt about that. But and that's why I think you use that pick in the second round. I'm not saying you have to. But, boy, the strongest consideration I'm giving right now to that pick is an interior offensive lineman.
Yeah, a good back will make a good offensive line better. Offensive line with holes up to the standard of good, I guess.
Right. And just to correct a couple things, the caller, what was his name? David?
Yes. Steve. Okay.
Steve, I'm sorry.
Whatever,
sorry,
pick
Steve.
A name.
But I want to kind of correct him on a couple things. It's Boye.
Yes.
And Omame.
Yes.
For the offensive line.
That's correct.
And defensive back to get the pronunciation right. But, you know, look, do you need to fix the offensive line high? If it fits, and Steve brings up points that I think a lot of people that enjoy the draft talk about. And he said, well, it's deep at this position, and you can get that later on. Look, I've heard general managers talk about that as well before, but look, they're not equal. They're not, okay. If you look at the running backs, okay, there's one guy in my opinion that is head and shoulders above the rest, and that's Fournette. There are some other guys that are pretty good, but they're not in that category. So even though it's a deep running back draft class, I think a lot of times you can get distracted by saying, well, we can get a running back later on. And the same goes for offensive line. Well, it's not a particularly deep offensive line class. You know, you better get your offensive line early because it's deep in cornerbacks and it's deep in defensive linemen, you can pick them up later. Well, maybe so. You may be able to pick a guy that plays that position, but you know what? If you don't take Solomon Thomas, if he's available at number four, are you going to be able to get a player that's of the caliber of Solomon Thomas later on just because it's deep? No. You know, so just because, you know, people say that it's, okay, it's a deep class at this position, a deep class at that position, let's address where it's not deep at. Look, I mean, the draft is a crapshoot, it's a percentage game. I mean, you look at, like, what Podesta for the Cleveland Browns, I believe that's his name.
Podesta
is doing, and he's acquiring draft picks. Because here's the deal. Draft picks are about a 41% chance of being a player that makes your team and contributes. You know, that's not very high. You know, so he's trying to play the odds and get as many picks as he can, and hopefully that he hits. That doesn't guarantee that you're going to hit. But, I mean, it goes back to the point. What I'm saying is that, look, it's because you say it's deep in this particular thing. Look, if you've got a player and he's a really good football player and he's available, I don't care
better draft him.
What the numbers are at that position that you can pick one in round three or round four, because it's not going to be the quality of that guy. And I think that's where the really good drafters make their living, is that they identify guys that are good football players. They don't care. Because it's a deep draft at somewhere else, and they're counting on picking up. Like, they're going to take the best player that they can take, period.
Jeff, my point was, if at that 35th pick, you're sitting there and you're the Jaguars, and on the board there is a guard that you rate as a starting caliber offensive guard in the NFL, in my opinion, you have to take him.
Sure. I'm all for it. Yeah. And, you know, and look, Tony, we just got done talking about Forrest Lamp. He is a really good football player. I mean, a really good football player. And the guard slash tackle that played tackle at Indiana is not in his category. He's a good football player. Yeah, Tony, you call him a quality starter.
But he's a starting guard, in my opinion, in the league.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's a difference between the two of those guys.
No doubt about it.
You know, so, you know, here's the thing. A lot of people say, well, you know, take Forrest Lamp, you know, like let's say you're talking about a team that's drafted in the middle of round one. Like, well, should we take Forrest Lamp? Well, you know what? We can probably get the guard from Indiana at the top of round two. We can trade up and get him there. So let's not use that pick there. You know, look. Sometimes, look, if the best guy is the best guy, you take the best guy. You know, if it fits.
Well, especially if it's a position of need.
Yes.
I mean, it's a no-brainer at that point. I think they've done we've done a lot of great things in free agency. And I really like what we've done in free agency. But the one thing that has still not been addressed is the offensive line. And as far as depth, and I still think you got to look at the interior of the offensive line and say,
Watford, right? Watford. Mommy's going to be back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, there's going to be competition.
Okay, but just because there's competition, Jeff, that doesn't mean
you're better.
You're better.
Right.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Terrence on the north side. Good evening, Terrence.
Hey.
What's happening,
you're
Terrence?
You're on the air. What's up?
Oh, nothing much. I was wondering if Jeff and Tony got nervous when they saw that it was Terrence, if they rolled their eyes.
I did. I'll tell you that.
I didn't. Yeah.
Well,
why would I get nervous?
This is a different Terrence.
Okay.
Oh, good. This is so what we call in the business an upgrade. Yes.
Yes, and I know the other Terrence from way back in college. But anyway,
he's a good
my
guy.
Question is to Jeff and Tony, put you on the clock, give me your best case scenario for the Jaguars for rounds one and two, and I'll give you mine. Mine will be Fournette and the guard that you're talking about.
Mm. It'll be a pretty good first and second
Forrest Lamp?
Yeah.
He's
not
going
to be there.
The Forrest Lamp will not be there at the top of round two.
I would say Myles Garrett and Leonard Fournette. Now that would be an ideal situation.
last year nobody would have guessed that we'd get Ramsey and Jack. So
yeah, exactly.
I know it's kind of pie in the sky, but possibly a trade up or something like that.
Tony, go ahead. Take a shot at it.
If they got Fournette, I'd be fine with it. Jeff and I differ. I don't think I'd pick a back there. And so, I think in a perfect world, Solomon Thomas or Jonathan Allen, and then a starting guard, the highest rated, if the Western Kentucky forward slams there, it'd be great. I don't think he's going to be there. I like the Deion Dixon kid. I don't know if second round might be a little bit high for him, but I think he's a starting caliber guy. Kid from Indiana, I the best guard, if he's starting caliber, that's who I'd pick.
Yeah, and the one guy that I keep going back to that I really like, I mean, first of all, I love Fournette. I think I've made that pretty clear.
I've heard about that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I would be very happy to see him get drafted because I think he's a special talent. But I think there's another offensive special talent in this draft, and it's the tight end at Alabama.
Yeah, good player.
I think he's a fantastic player. If this team were to draft him that high, I think he would be an immediate impact player for the offense as a receiver. I think he's a capable blocker and a willing blocker. In round two, in a perfect world, you'd see Forrest Lamp. But, I mean, it's probably not going to happen. But you've got some other options there at the offensive line spot. You've got the tackle from Utah. Was it Garrett Bowles?
I don't like him.
You don't?
No.
And I haven't watched him much, but I know that he's rated pretty high, because I think there's going to be some tackles that are going to be available.
When I say I don't like him, I wouldn't take him. I think he's a tackle only. Seeing him at the combine, great athlete, but he's not a big man, if that makes sense. He does, skinnier, lower, not a big ass guy, skinnier legs. I think he might be maxed out on how big he's going to be.
Let's go back to one more phone call. Okay. And this is Michael in Orlando with maybe another option for the Jags at four. What's up?
Yes, hi. How y'all doing tonight?
Great,
doing
good.
Fantastic. Actually, I had a question in regards to what you guys were talking about earlier with the whole gamesmanship thing. We brought in Deshaun Watson for 2 days. And whereas I agree that I don't think they would bring in someone just for the point of manipulating other teams, I have to wonder, yes, we need to do our due diligence on the top quarterback available, but do you think there's a chance that we could actually benefit from that and that maybe a team thinks that we're serious about it, trades up to 2 or 3, gets him, we get a better player, or maybe they trade with us to get him? Or, I don't know. I mean, I just can't see how that doesn't benefit us in more ways than just doing our due diligence.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think it has anything. I don't think any team is looking at us bringing Deshaun Watson going, oh, the Jags might take him at four. I don't think that's the fear of anybody. And I don't think anyone's going to trade up to four to get Deshaun Watson. It's my opinion.
Let
me say one more thing about the kid from Utah, Jeff, because his tape is good. I don't think he's a guard. I think he's a pure tackle. And I think right now what this team's set up is you need help in the interior. So not that he's not going to be a good football player. And when I say, size-wise, I mean, I think he is he's one of those guys who's an athletic tackle. Who he might remind me of a little bit of is Jordan Gross, who was a very good player for Carolina. But Jordan Gross wasn't going to ever be a banger inside and where you can move him inside. He was purely a tackle and an outside guy, and I think that's the role of that kid from Utah.
Have you watched Ryan Ramczyk? Say that right?
Sure.
I did.
What are your thoughts on him? He's the tackle
I like
from
him.
Wisconsin.
I think, he's a tackle. I think he can play guard. I think he's a big, powerful guy. Talked with him a little bit at the combine. He's a very quiet guy. He has an interesting history. Didn't quit football, bounced around at some smaller schools in Wisconsin. Stevens Point was one of them. And then ended up going, I believe it was maybe even as a walk-on first at Wisconsin, and ended up earning a scholarship, or maybe even a scholarship guy. I think he only played 2 years. Maybe only one full year, if I remember correctly. But
he's a big, powerful guy
who has upside. I like him.
Yeah, and he's kind of interesting because, you know what, many people view him as the top tackle that's on the board.
Yep.
And, Tony, I think he's a good player. Do I think he's a great prospect? I don't.
I think he's a guy who – I like him because of his strength, Jeff.
Yeah,
I think he'll be a better guard than tackle in the pros.
Because, when I say I don't think that he's great, when I say that, look, I mean, typically there's always a tackle somewhere in the draft that people just are gushing about, that has –
Well, that's not this year.
And that's not the case, with this draft. I mean, so when I say that, look, he's not a great player, I mean, look, he's a really good football player. He's done really good things at Wisconsin. But he's not in that, that category where he's coming out and he said, gosh, he is the best of a really good group of left tackles. It's pretty weak at the left tackle position this year. And when I watch him, Tony, he reminded me of one guy that you'll remember very well because he's got that kind of that low crouch stance. He plays kind of like Zimmerman.
Yep.
Kind of that real low to the ground, which when you see that, you go, okay, here's a guy that could play guard because he kind of plays low.
And, Jeff, you make a great point about the tackles and the whole offensive line class being a little bit weak, although I think there's some good guards out there, and we've talked about that. But in a normal draft year where you have those, two, three really good tackles, and if that was the case, I don't think any of these tackles go in the first round in a normal draft, in a normal offensive line draft year.
Wow.
I think you're right.
Wow. Let's come back and go around the National Football League. Busy week. busy few weeks coming up ahead of the 2017 NFL Draft. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars.com and Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday continues right now.
We're counting down the days, 52, until the opening of Daly's Place. Brought to you by the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association and Visit Florida. Play local, eat local, stay and play. That's May 27th, Tedeschi Trucks Band, here outside of Everbank Field. Daly's Place under construction. Let's go around the National Football League, and we start off with a story we mentioned last week as a possibility, now made official by the Columbia Broadcasting System this week. Tony Romo is the new lead analyst. Phil Simms is no longer. He still has years on his contract. They're trying to figure out what he's going to do. My question for you guys, you guys have both done that job before, an analyst, television analyst. How hard is it to jump in right away without any reps at all?
I mean, you know, talk about walking into a little bit of a firestorm. I mean, he is going to be scrutinized, critiqued right out of the gate, and then that's tough for a guy like Tony Romo. You know, I was able to go to NFL Europe and learn a little bit over there, do the Jaguars preseason games. You know, so I hope that for Tony Romo's sake that he does some dry runs, some practice with Jim Nantz, so that he can kind of get a feel for it. Because it's, you know, it's a challenge, you know. It's different, you know, it's different. But Tony Romo's a smart guy, and I'm sure that he's going to do very good at it.
Well, so I'm shocked that CBS gave him the number one slot right out of the gate. Here's the advantage he has. Being a color analyst is exponentially easier if you have a great play-by-play guy. And he's going to get one of the best play-by-play guys in the business, one of the best ever. And so Jim Nantz will make Tony Romo's job much easier. There's an art to it. And having Jim Nantz lead him and get him to where he needs to go and lead him in the right, you know, just help him, will make him his job so much easier and the learning curve so much shorter. With that said, there is a learning curve, and it's not as easy as everyone thinks. I mean, it's a great job, and it's a lot of fun. You get to talk football, but there's timing, and there's all kinds of you have people talking in your ear as you're talking, trying to tell you what to say and not say and do and what's coming up and reads and everything else. So that part's difficult. And I think Jeff said something that's it's going to be very interesting. In today's world with Twitter and being on the number one team, he will be criticized and ripped apart for everything he says and every flub and every mistake he makes. And how he handles that will be very interesting, and it'll be something he's going to have to figure out. And my recommendation is don't read Twitter if you don't have thick skin, because they're going to come after you. And history shows there are certain guys who can't do it. And there's guys who get big jobs because of where they played and the success they had as players. And after a couple years, they're done. And you can go through the list. I mean, look at Emmitt Smith.
Emmitt Smith, Gary Rice, Ronnie Lott, Joe Montana.
Joe Montana. The list is long. Ray Lewis.
Eric Dickerson.
I mean, the list is long. And, yes, Tony Romo's smart, but that doesn't mean you're going to be great at it. There's, you know, it's a talent. And he is getting thrown into the deep end. But the advantage he does have is he has Jim Nantz, who's one of the best ever, and a good play-by-play guy will help out a color analyst quite a bit.
I like Phil Simms. I mean, he's a good friend of mine, and I still owe him dinner.
Oh.
We made a bet on the drafting of quarterback Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Glennon?
Huh?
Jameis
Winston. Yeah. You know, and he was right, I was wrong, so I owe him a dinner. And but, you know, he's going to be fine. I mean, look, Phil Simms will have an opportunity to work in some capacity, whether it's at CBS or whatever. But to be perfectly honest with you, even though I'm good friends with Phil Simms, I thought that it was time for CBS to make a change at the top. I think there's guys that do a better job than he does. And I'm not saying that Tony Romo is deserving, because, you know, how do you know? You've never heard him do anything. you know. So, you know, it is what it is. That's the way it is in that business. Mm-hmm. You know, the next Hall of Fame type player or big name that retires, I mean, the next guy could be out. That's just the way it is.
By the way, the A crew, they'll do the Thursday night games and the Sunday games.
That's hard.
And they get the Thanksgiving game with the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, but that's
this
year too. That's hard. Yeah. You know, because now instead of focusing on one game a week, you got 2 games a week. So it's very difficult to prep and prepare for 2 games in 1 week. Tony, you do it all the time, but you've kind of found a rhythm. And then the second game that you're doing of that week is the same team against familiar opponents, you know, for the most part. But, you know, you're talking about Tony Romo could be in, you know, two different conferences from one game in the first part of the week, midweek to the weekend. So that's not easy to do.
No, and what I do is time consuming and it's hard, you know, preparing for 2 games a week. But, Jeff, you're exactly right. The second one's exponentially easier because I know the Jaguars – forward and backwards, and I watch film all the time, and I know what's going on, and I'm in the city, and so I know all the stories. And half of the games are against division opponents, and I know those teams really well. So, you know, that part's much, much easier. And like you said, I'm just shocked that CBS did it, I'll be honest with you. To throw him into the deep end, 2 national games a week on the number one crew with a guy who has never done it. They had to do some rehearsals with him with Jim Nantz off tape.
I bet you they didn't.
They had to, Jeff.
I mean, there's no way that they did.
Well, I know there's a history. Obviously, he's the one in production meetings whenever they cover the Cowboys, and there's always reporting back that this could be a candidate.
I would, Tony, make a big bet that they.
Yeah,
did
you
not
might be right, Jeff.
It's
just remarkable to me, but JP. There's tons of guys who are good in those production meetings. That doesn't mean anything. Because now you're talking about, here's what you have
to
do.
That's where it starts. This guy could be good at this.
I know that, but here's the difference. In a production meeting, you have 5 minutes to think of thoughts and talk and say things and do everything else. All of a sudden now you have about 30 seconds to say something that is entertaining, unique, concise, to the point, and
he's not even going to get 30 seconds.
Not even 30, it's like 15 seconds.
Yeah,
it's short. But you have to like be.
Tony,
man,
you like
easy.
To use 30, but it's supposed to be 20 to 25.
Right, that's a good point. Good, well said, Jeff. That's a good point. That's part of my problem.
Is Romo a Hall of Famer?
No.
Romo?
Yeah.
No.
Marshawn Lynch, beast mode. Could he be in the silver and black
next year
coming out of retirement? That's what he told the Raiders he intends to do.
Perfect fit. You know, and look, he can force the Seahawks to cut him and to gain his release because as soon as he reports back to Seattle,
they don't want him.
They don't want him, first off, but as soon as he comes back and says, hey, I'm back, you know, his contract now becomes active at a $9 million cost, and they can't afford to keep $9 million on their roster right now. So, you know, he's going to get released. Maybe, you know, McKenzie will throw him a cold beer up there in Seattle for Marshawn Lynch's rights, but not a big deal. And I hope to see him back because he's entertaining.
I think he's
a fantastic back.
Why do you ever quit?
I don't know. He just got tired of it, you know, whatever. You know, I love the guy, though. Speaks his mind, plays hard, entertaining, never gets in trouble. You know, look, I like the guy, and I hope to see him back in silver and black because, you know, if there was ever a perfect fit, you know, for the Raiders, it would be Marshawn Lynch at the running back spot for the Raiders. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it would be interesting to watch for sure. Hey, Tony, enjoy your trip with the Big Apple. Eat some dinner tonight for us, will you?
I will, and I'll see you guys next week.
Okay. Tony Boselli, Jeff Loggeman, Hollywood Max Hockman.
Waving his Jaguars flag back.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Nice work.
I'm proud. For everyone involved, this is JP Shadrick. Thank you for watching and listening. Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars.com and Jaguars Radio.